From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
I'm fucking speechless. I can't say nothing. I really can't. All right, let me start it. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Midnight Movie Cowboys for this week. Got myself, Stuart, in a state of disbelief at the moment. Over in Colorado, John, Grace.
Hello.
And holy shit, look who's back, brother. Mr. H.D. Hunter Doozing over in Dallas, Texas. Papa D.
I am not a crook.
No, that's Rob Zombie.
Yeah.
Stole my life.
Oh,
man.
She likes to dance like Uma Thurman.
The fuck did I just watch? God.
Do we want to do whip out your junk? Or
I've got so much. I need to settle down. I got a lot of it. So if you boys want to go first.
Do we want to do the reaction first?
I think we better. Yeah, it's going to fade.
Set the table, Stu.
Okay. So as you guys know, the Munsters trailer dropped yesterday or today?
Today. It was like when I got on the internet this morning, it was up.
Right.
Yeah. Same here.
Right. And because I can't speak. So we thought, okay, well, John and I already planned to do All Filler, No Killer part, whatever the hell this one is. I think it's four. This is before the fact. We're going to just do it. And I thought, well, the Munsters trailer is dropping the day we're recording. I'm going to hit Hunter up and see if he's available or if he's still unavailable. And you said to me, I'm not missing out because of that Munsters trailer.
No, any excuse to talk about Rob Zombie's The Munsters, honestly. I won't miss an opportunity to talk about it. No.
Wow. Okay. It's John's cat, it sounds like.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Fez. So I had not seen the trailer till literally about 2.5 minutes before I hit the record button. I was going to try and do it a reaction live. Couldn't get it working out at the moment with the new equipment I just installed. Never mind. Another day, another way. So, yeah. Fuck Rob Zombie. It's a piece of shit. Oh, my God. I couldn't believe it.
This movie kind of looks like a Zucker Abram Zucker parody of The Munsters or something by way of like Rob Zombie art school. But something, you watched it, right, John?
Yeah.
Okay.
It put you on the sleep.
It's like a Mad TV sketch or something.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like a movie.
No, it doesn't look like a real movie at all. There's something about the way it's shot where it feels very
shit.
Like, but here's the thing is that's particularly annoying is it's a Munsters origin story.
That's the problem.
Yeah. I don't think anybody has ever lost sleep wondering how, you know, Lily and Herman met.
No. Like,
and, you know, when I went back and watched some episodes of the show today, and the real comedy of the show is, and they only have like one little bit, and it's that bit at the end that's not very funny. The real comedy of the show is the Munsters interacting with the normal world.
Yeah.
And how, like, you know, like I watched the one today where Herman joins the Dodgers. Like he like destroys the stadium and he's like this huge liability. It's a really funny episode, like just comic firing off, but it's all funny because, you know, people interact with them and are horrified by them and they don't understand what the problem is.
No, they're completely oblivious to why is everybody always reacting like this to us? We're just normal people like everybody else. But
you know, just based on this trailer though, it kind of feels like this whole movie takes place in Rob Zombie Monsterland.
This is 8 year old Rob Zombie going, this is what I would make if I ever got a chance to make the monsters. This is my tale of it. But
it's all in his weird Dracula world. And the only time it seemed to go, oh yeah, there's that, is at the very end when he's like, greetings from Transylvania, and the person passes out. But I don't understand why they passed out, because he looks like a guy dressed up as Frankenstein.
Yeah.
You know, the gag doesn't really make sense. Whereas like you watch that one where he joins the Dodgers and like he's smashing like balls into people and like taking them down, and he's like ripping, he's like trying to catch a ball and ripping through the fence, and you know, and when he runs, he like runs into the first baseman and he flies across the stand, you know.
There's no jokes in the trailer, or they're just punchlines and no buildup or anything. They couldn't find a decent gag to put in the trailer. So
yeah, it's kind of bereft of humor. And also, I think our friend Walter, or it was Zolly, or I want to say it was Walter, because this sounds like a Walter comment. He was like, why are the monsters childless in this version?
Where's Eddie? I said that actually.
Where's Eddie?
Oh, that was you. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Zolly said it's ripping off Viva Rock Vegas, the second Flintstones movie.
I never saw that one. I only saw the first one.
Apparently Zolly saw it.
Well, of course Zolly saw it. He has it on Blu-ray, I'm sure.
Mm. Yeah, obviously.
But I was like, where's Eddie Munster? I think Eddie Munster when I think the monsters, but they have to be childless like Rob and Sherry. So.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Just real quick. Sorry, Hunter. So they have to be childless. Why couldn't they have inherited Marilyn at least? That's a niece.
Yeah, and I was going to say there's no Marilyn either.
No.
You don't have I mean, I don't know if she shows up at some point, but you don't have that straight character who's in there either. It's like there's two things Rob and Sherry Moon Zombie can't identify with: children and normal everyday people who aren't like monster convention going rock star people.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no Marilyn listed in the cast on IMDb.
Okay.
Yeah. So I looked it up. I went, are they in the movie at all? And there was nothing on IMDb. So, you know,
the problem is this trailer is, you know, I got a lot to say. The fact is they have to, he's made an origin story. So now he's got to put so much work into the origins of a story that did not need an origin. It could have been straight into the real world, the modern world with the monsters, like the TV show, like the subsequent films from Monster Go Home to Monster's Revenge. But he's got to build an origin story.
You know what would have been funny, okay? Because like the Brady Bunch movie kind of did this, where they dropped the Brady Bunch into the 90s. And the 70s juxtaposed with the 90s, it was kind of it kind of spoofed the Brady Bunch a little bit. But what might have been funny is, you know, the monsters were clashing with the normal square world in the, you know, when it was on in the, you know, 60s.
Yeah,
I guess. You know, the monsters, it might have been funny to drop them in to like the modern horror world where it's all kind of blood, guts and torture and all this kind of stuff. And they seem really quaint by comparison. And all these people are freaked out, but what is it? What you guys are scared? I don't know. It's just, that's an idea, but you would, you know, even just doing the monsters clashing with the regular world would still be funny if you did it today. But it might have been, you could have had fun with it by kind of commenting on modern horror culture versus, you know, that horror culture of the before the late 60s, early 70s. You know, that might have been a fun pitch. I don't know, you know.
And you
the problem is it was shot in Eastern Europe, so he was free to create Rob Zombie World instead of contrasting them to the normal world. So it wasn't shot in America. Yeah, it might have helped had they filmed it in America or Canada or something to get that.
They could have turned it into Texas, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre on Netflix.
Where, that's true, in
Romania or something. Like, you know, it's these. It's a Texas town, but it's clearly like a former Soviet bloc. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
Played.
The one thing I fear as well is that we've seen all the best bits in this trailer.
God help us. I was thinking, if this is the best stuff they got for the trailer, oh boy, like that's not a good sign.
No.
And Sherry Moon Zombie, just not a good Lily Munster, I don't think.
No.
You know, I think Dan Roebuck's doing his best Al Lewis. It looks like they're making him into the villain of the piece, though.
By trying to sabotage Lily meeting Herman.
That's kind of the vibe I got. But I don't really like Sherry Moon Zombie as Lily Munster, and you know, look at her IMDb. You know, you would think, with the horror community being as up its own butt as it is, you would
think incestuous.
You would think she would be getting work in all kinds of low budget stuff, but you know, she's not in. She's in like two things that aren't directed by Rob Zombie.
He said she'll only work with Rob Zombie. That's it.
Oh, yeah, and that may be the case.
Yeah.
Okay. She might get offers to do Shudder exclusives all the time, but you know, it kind of feels like Kevin Smith and Harley Quinn Smith a little bit, you know, where we're kind of propping her up, because I just don't think she's very good in the role. Her line delivery is a little bit, it's not there.
It's garbage. Let's just call it for what it is. It's garbage.
But, you know, but the guy who plays Herman, he kind of looks the part. He doesn't have Fred, but he's no Fred Gwynn, you know?
No.
Like, Fred Gwynn is so iconic in that role, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So good.
But, you know, we knew this was coming. This has been, nearly a year? We've been ragging on this thing, and we finally got the trailer now. And
but we were kind of excited when we found out it wasn't going to be R-rated. We were like
optimistic. Yeah,
we were like maybe, and we're still going to watch this thing. I know I am.
Look, it's we're going to do it. Yeah,
look at John's face. John's doing the Vince McMahon thing right now.
John needs to have that No Chance in Hell song playing in the background.
Yeah.
I don't think he'll be using it anymore, based on what I've heard.
No.
And of course, like, Herman is playing in like the Misfits at one point, or the Cramps or whatever. Like, he's playing some show. He's got the leather and he's,
no, that's, he's
playing in the
that, no, sorry, that is taken from Months to Go Home. That
human
leather.
He's playing in a bit.
No, not in the band, but he was dressed in leather.
Oh, okay, he was dressed in leather, but I was going to say that felt like a Rob Zombie touch.
Yeah. He's look, the thing I'm looking forward to in this, which is not much now, is the nods that he gives, but you can't base an entire film on, you know, a nod and a wink to something from Months to Go Home. If he has something from Monsters Revenge in there, I'll probably geek out because I love that film. But... and so, like, I do Months to Go Home, but you can't do a whole 9,500 minute film on that. It's just not. Yeah.
It's a stain.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a shame we haven't got Garrow on for this, but we'll have him on for the film when we do the review, obviously.
They get ready for a month of editing.
Nah, he's just going to go in as it is. I cannot be bothered. I don't have the time either.
Well, we had a good run, folks.
Yeah.
Unedited Garrow. That'll sink us.
Well, I don't think so. We'll be right. We have to put a big giant bleep over the screen and the audio. But look, honestly, this trailer, you guys saw me watching it. I just could not believe what I was watching. It just... Yeah, boy, boy. September 2022.
Like an ad for a rebooted syndicated TV show version of the Munsters.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It looks like one of those mid-90s ones they did, which was Munsters' Scary Little Christmas or something.
Yeah,
it looks
yeah.
a lot in that
yeah.
line.
I remember watching those, yeah.
Yeah, I've got that one. And there was another one as well, which I think I don't have, but positives. Look, the guy who played, you know, Al Lewis Light, what's his name? Daniel Roebuck.
Dan Roebuck, yeah.
Yeah, he sounded all right.
Did you know Dan Roebuck was originally cast as the Daniel Stern character in Home Alone?
No.
And they started film. They did like 2 weeks with him, and Joe Pesci didn't get along with him, or they didn't really mesh. And Christopher and so he got fired, and they initially offered the role to Daniel Stern, but he turned it down because they wouldn't pay him more for more weeks of shooting. And so he eventually, they went back to him and he said yes. But yeah, Dan Roebuck almost played the Daniel Stern part. And
didn't know he'd been around that long. I thought,
yeah, you know, he was in, speaking of people who did sitcom reboots, Penelope Spheeris put him in a movie called Dudes. He was one of the leads in Dudes, which was this kind of punk rock movie. It had Flea and Lee Ving in it, and it was this kind of punk rock western movie that he starred in. But yeah, no, he's been around a while. You know, but I can't think of other stuff he's been in, but he's been in a lot of stuff. He's not, you know, he didn't just fall off the wagon. But I noticed a few other Rob Zombie regulars in there, like Richard Brake. I think he's like the mad scientist at the beginning.
I'll tell you what was cool. Good to see Nosferatu in there. I enjoyed that. That was a nice touch. I think that the peppering of the minor characters in the film will be something I think I will enjoy.
And, you know, I like some of the images. I like the image of Herman and Lily drinking out of a skull, like they're at school. Like some of the images are fun ideas, you know, are very Rob Zombie touches. But I mean, overall, it doesn't look very funny.
I honestly hope that this trailer is a lot worse than what the film is. I'm still going to hold out a smidgen of hope by saying it could be a good film, but man, I ain't feeling it right now at the moment.
And the director doesn't exactly have a great track record, and especially doesn't have a great track record with humor.
No, he doesn't. And we have to know who it is filming this buddy movie. Rob Zombie in big letters all over the screen of the Devil's Rejects and House of a Thousand Corpses. Okay, but you're advertising films that if you take your kids to go watch this, because this is apparently a PG family film, they'll then go, oh, I want to watch that other family film we made, House of a Thousand Corpses. Well, you can't because you're too young. What about Devil's Rejects? You can't because you're too young. What about Halloween? Yeah. You can't. So what was the point of putting his name for the other films that people know?
Because it's a joke that he's like, oh, he's done these horrible, bloody horror movies. Now he's doing a family film.
I don't think so. I honestly think he's just shilling his own stuff, which is completely different than what he's got with this product right now.
Why not both? Make a joke and advertise your other stuff.
I don't say.
Hey, if the kids watch it, great. You know.
Yeah, but I don't say that he should completely disown everything he's done in the past. Well, he should, but he won't. But this should be a brand new entity. And honestly, the execs at Universal said, get this shit off. Your fucking previous movies, we don't care. Get them off the trailer now. And just make this a trailer about the Munsters, not about Rob Zombie's previous work. And now here's the Munsters trailer. And I just, you know, when I saw it.
Yeah, he thinks of himself as a brand. And so he's acting accordingly.
He's not John.
And the brand
Carpenter.
Is he never matured beyond 12 years of age.
That's correct. Well, about 12. Yeah.
Yeah. He seems like the geeky guy. We're not picking on geeky guys because shit, we're all of them. But he seems like the geeky guy who lined up at a horror convention to get an autograph off of someone from Dawn of the Dead back in 1983.
Ken Foree.
Ken Foree. He goes, I'm going to put you in a movie one day.
Yeah, sure you will, kid.
And yeah, it happened, but.
But, you know,
there are kids out there, and I speak of one of my sons, my 15-year-old, who really likes his Halloween. I said, get out. Not my job.
Yeah, you know, that's true, though. You talk to younger people, and they like Rob Zombie's Halloween.
Yeah, he likes it. He doesn't like it as much as the Carpenter one. He still admits that is the better one. But he goes, I do like Zombie's take on Halloween. I said, look, you know, you like what you like. I'm not going to, you know, kick it to the curb for it. But I disagree.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I'm sort of counteracting myself what I said a couple of months ago about that putting all that stuff in the trailer was pointless. But I see what you're saying, Hunter, is that he's trying to appeal to the kids out there, the teenagers, who will see this and then go, I want to go back and see these other films who haven't seen it.
Yeah.
I was talking more about the, you know, the 9 and 10-year-olds who will say, oh, I like this Munsters movie, it was funny, which it won't be, but they'll enjoy it and want to go watch his older stuff, which they cannot.
Which, by the way, I don't know how many 9 and 10-year-olds are going to be clamoring to watch the Munsters. I think it's going to be parents who like the Munsters who might go, hey kids, let's watch this.
That's it. They won't be actively going out to saying, hey, we want to watch the Munsters, but they will be watching with the parents who grew up on it.
Yeah, the parents who grew up on it are going to be like, hey, let's watch this tonight. But they'd be better off watching the show because the show is so good. Like I was just watching it today and I was like, this is still really funny. Like,
yeah,
the writing's tight.
The comedy is there because the chemistry was there, especially with Al Lewis and Fred Gwynne. They knew each other back then. Yeah.
Oh, go ahead. Al Lewis, who struck, physically, corporally punished a young Adam Carolla. Adam Carolla said he was being his friend. He was in a car with Al Lewis when he was a little kid, and Al Lewis smacked him. He was being obnoxious.
Oh man, that's funny. But so look, I'm not trying to paint Zombie as some sort of genius marketer, but I'm now starting to see where he's probably going with this. But at the end of the day, I really don't think this is going to be very good. But again, I've got about a 2% optimism left out of 100%.
Yeah, I was very morbidly curious. I you know, when they recreated the opening, I didn't love it. They released that footage of it. And I remember going, this kind of feels like fans recreating
it's
the opening. It doesn't feel real. And then when I saw this trailer, I went, okay, you know, I'm going in with very low expectations, but I am going to watch it. We've spent too much time on this show obsessing.
Way too much. I think more than anybody.
I can tell you exactly what this reminds me of. It just struck me. I don't know if you saw this Amy Poehler and that other actor from Parks and Rec would do these recreations of Heart to Heart, the opening credits. And they did all the montage scenes of, you know, the hearts in action. And they did the sets and everything. That's what that earlier teaser resembled to me. It's like, oh, these are comedians making fun of this old show and doing the montage beginning or doing the opening credits.
And it's kind of like, you know, the thing that I said at the beginning was it reminds me of a Zucker Abrams Zucker like kind of parody. The really bad Zucker Abrams Zucker like imitators, you know, those parody. Remember when we got all those awful parody films?
Date
like
movie, Hots. Epic movie,
superhero movie. Yeah.
Meet the Spartans, you know, the joke often those movies didn't have jokes. They had references and you were supposed to think that the reference itself was funny. Family Guy is kind of guilty of this too.
It's Family Guy humor.
When it's just like, oh, I recognize that. That's funny. That's what that teaser kind of felt like, was comedians referencing something and you're supposed to think it's funny because they're making a reference.
Yeah.
That's what you, so yeah, I think you're bang on the money there, John. It kind of reminds me of that.
Yeah.
And is that,
manatees and idea balls. The best South Park joke of all time.
Oh, I forgot about that South Park episode.
The writer's, it's your best joke. It really is our best joke.
The writer's room for Family Guy. Have you seen that, Stu?
No. No.
It's like on South Park, they have this episode where they go to the writer's room for Family Guy, and it's manatees in a tank, and they have these balls with just like words on them. The manatees knock them into the chute, and it's just like random cultural references, and they go, okay, here's the next joke.
Sounds pretty accurate, actually.
It is.
Yeah.
I'll have to send you a link because that joke's on YouTube. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, it's Oh, that's such a that was back when South Park could really bring the brutal, you know, cultural commentary.
But there was some there was a shot in that trailer as well where it was Herman and Lily in a car, and they were driving in what was a field or a green pastures behind, and it was a green fucking screen. It was so obvious.
It needs to look like the Dracula video.
It does. No, it really does. At least that has
the Phantom Creeps robot just go off for no reason.
You know what I'm going to do when I get this film? I'm going to desaturate and play it in black and white.
Like the new Blu-ray of Johnny Mnemonic that's coming out.
Is it black and white? Oh my
god. There's goodness. A Johnny Mnemonic in black and white Blu-ray that's coming out.
No, I did it. It was all with Mad Max Fury Road.
Can't polish that crap.
You know, I think Johnny Mnemonic in black and white would be awesome if it was like super high contrast, like just blackest blacks and whitest whites. You know? It might be interesting.
It looks like Sin City.
Yeah.
Actually, Low Res and Hans had put out a video like, God, I think 5 months ago, where Low Res said maybe had he shot this in black and white, or at least saturated the color to where it was very, you know, very muted.
Yeah,
it would work better. And it's funny how they basically predicted it. It's like, yeah. And now looking at the trailer it dropped this morning, that's exactly what they should.
That is one rich colored palette looking film, which it should not be.
Well,
it's
too colorful.
Mute the colors, make it look like a 60s movie with the faded colors and stuff.
Yeah, I was thinking that this movie, you know, it wouldn't be looking like a comedy parody if they had the black and white. I get why he wants to do that, have lots of colors, but I don't think it's the right move. But
much like the Addams Family film that came out in 91. That was in color, but it wasn't stark.
No,
it was just nicely shot.
Yeah,
it was shot on film, though, so that helped.
Yeah, and
true.
And it was shot by Barry Sonnenfeld, who's
a big difference.
World-class cinematographer. Even though he wasn't the cinematographer on that, he has a real eye. The Addams Family movie and those movies were a real good example of kind of taking one of those sitcoms and just.
Exactly.
Doing it as a movie with a new cast.
It's so good.
And capturing what made it good, you know.
Yeah. But this may rival, I don't know yet, but this may rival the Mockingbird Lane pilot, that one episode that came out with Jerry O'Connell as, or was that the Addams Family? Was that no, it was Munsters, wasn't it? Mockingbird Lane?
I forget.
Yeah. I'm sure there was an episode
where
it was one episode and it just died.
Unsold pilot, basically.
Yeah, yeah. It aired, but that was it. It was just the one episode.
So I think we can agree this is being handled as well as Universal's other Universal Monster reboots and remakes. The what did they call it? Dark Universe or whatever.
Yeah, they don't get it. It's amazing to me. They want these things to be Marvel movies.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Instead of being Universal movies. Like, it
doesn't work that way, you know?
I saw the trailer for that Mummy movie they did with Tom Cruise, and I was like, what the hell are they thinking? What is going on? Like, the Brendan Fraser Mummy was more true to the Universal films than this. You know?
It was like the Benicio del Toro Wolfman film. It was just terrible.
Oh, that was awful.
Yeah.
And even that's closer than like Dracula Untold or the Mummy Unbound or whatever the heck, you know, like even that is closer in spirit, and that's still, and that still misses the mark.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. The only hit they have was the Invisible Man, which I think, I guess, took it back to a sort of a raw horror, you know, it made it look like the horror movies of today, I guess.
I think the Invisible Man kind of felt like, to me, I only saw the trailer. I didn't see the movie, but it kind of felt like it was a result of the Jordan Peele effect on horror films, where there's kind of a social element to it. Like Jordan Peele's movie, like, you know, there's a lot of these race horror movies we have after Get Out came out. I felt like Invisible Man was doing it with like sexism or so, or rape culture.
Yeah.
Or so, you know what I'm saying? Like it has this kind of liberal social stuff going on. It felt like it was a Jordan Peele type thing, even though he didn't, I don't think he had anything to do with it. I think it was James Wan's guy who did it. Lee Whannell, didn't he do it?
Yeah. I know they marketed it on being anti-sexist or something.
Yes.
Which has nothing to do with the H.G. Wells story from whatever.
No, that's why I will not watch it, because that is my favorite story.
You know what brought that in was, you know who you can blame for that is Paul Verhoeven, because he did Hollow Man.
And
there's a scene, because he's Paul Verhoeven, he has to have the Invisible Man rape someone. You know, like it's just okay.
Alan
thank you,
Moore
Paul.
Did it in The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, I think.
But and so that kind of opened the door for the Invisible Man being a, instead of it being a the science fiction thing, it's a he's a rapist, you know.
Right.
So the Invisible
Even
Man
though I
was
think one of those Euro pervs like Jess Franco made a movie like that in the early 70s, or one of the French guys or something.
Speaking of that, you know, Nez watched every Jess Franco movie ever made.
Oh my God.
He sat through all of them. I don't know. I asked him, I said, Anthony, what are you doing? He goes, yeah, was it 193 or something? I think it was. He watched them, every one of them.
Jess Franco, I don't understand the fan base he has, because there are people who love his movies and I've never been able to sit through one of them.
No.
Like, I think I've tried to watch a couple, and
I think I saw Jack the Ripper. I think he did one, something like that. A Jack the Ripper film or the Ripper?
I could tell you, but then because friends of mine are part of that cult, they're like a major part of that cult, they will think I am mocking them and ripping on them. So
you are.
I'm not going to discuss. But I think he, in the days of fanzines, and you had all these video releases with screwy credits and everything in the 80s, the fun days of VHS, because you had this one guy who likely directed way more movies than he's given credit for, all those guys got fascinated with it, and they wanted a scene they could dominate and say, hey, I know about all these obscure movies. None of them are worth a damn, but if you watch all of them, it makes sense or something.
And
like
one of those guys was Johnny Ramone.
Yes. As Vincent Gallo admitted to me.
Yeah, they tried you said
they tried
Vincent
to outdo
like,
each other in collecting Euro trash horror films, and Johnny won because he wanted all those Jess Franco movies,
and Gallo Vincent hates them. That Gallo's like, I can't sit through that crap.
Yeah, he goes, they're terrible. He made one movie and edited 100 out of them. He goes, they're all terrible. he despises his movies, but Johnny Ramone loved them. He'd sit there and watch all of them.
Yeah, there's something about him that there's a certain type of person that is spellbound by Jess Franco.
I personally don't get it. I've tried. I've watched a bunch of them, and I
tried watching his Fu Manchu movie with Christopher Lee, and you know, I think I bailed after like 10 minutes. You know,
it's so cheap. Rosalba Neri is supposed to be shooting people with a machine gun, so she's just shaking the gun off camera, and you hear the sound effect. Because they didn't want to pay for the blanks or the flares to make the gun look like it's shooting. That's how cheap he is. He's like, you know, plane crash, just shake the camera over a postcard of a plane or something, you know?
So with this Munsters, it seems to me that this was always set to be as the first of many.
You think so?
I think so. I mean, he's looking, looking for that franchise opportunity, which is what this is, because I mean, everyone loves a lot of people like the Munsters. And this but this is just the first, folks. If you don't like it, we'll introduce Eddie and Marilyn in the next one. And then, you know, this can't be a one shot for him.
Well
this is Rob's him back at the majors.
Yeah.
Like, he's been crowdfunding this crap. So yeah, this is his re-entry to Universal, you know?
Yeah. Cause you know, Rob had, he did House of a Thousand Corpses, Devil's Rejects, and then later like his micro budget, Three from Hell. But you know, he had the reins to Halloween for a minute for two movies. So yeah, you know, if this does well, you know, why wouldn't he make another one? This is a entry point, and you know, we'll see, but it's going to be in cinema and on Peacock.
Ain't no one going to the theater to watch this.
That's a bad sign.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's be honest, guys, though. If it plays near you, are you going to go see it?
Nope.
Screen? Yeah. I'm not getting any fucking Peacock. Sorry. I take my son to it and give him a test. He's never seen the monsters. He's never seen those old movies. So okay. I'll see how it affects him.
What has your son done to you?
But he watched the trailer with me today, and he said it looked like the worst. It's the worst movie trailer he's ever seen in his life.
There you go. There you go.
So oh,
there you go.
Yeah. Unbelievable. I mean, I expected bad. I didn't expect that.
Yeah.
All right, look, it wasn't as bad as say the trailer you did for 31, which was just it was a joke.
This movie
was there a trailer
is going
for that?
Yeah.
I can't remember.
This was it, movie is going to
it's like
be,
a clown nose going honk honk or something.
It was just the trailer was just clowns having sex.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think there's some porn for that. He could have saved everybody the trouble. I think there's a clown fucking fetish or something like that.
I promise you though, this movie is going to be Gunga Din compared to 31.
Oh God. Jesus!
There's no way it's worse than 31.
No.
31 is
it's the bottom of the barrel.
I don't know. Actually, I don't know what's worse, that or Lords of Salem.
31.
You think 31
is worse?
They're both shit, but 31 was just incredibly bad.
31. I just remember having the hardest time getting to the end of that. Like it was just painful to sit through.
Yeah, it was a chore. The thing was like fucking chore.
Yeah. Unbelievable. I mean, I won't be saying I'll be awaiting it to hit Pirate Bay, but but you know,
this show does not endorse piracy for those out there.
Oh, I fucking do that shit. Fuck that shit.
So we want to, speaking of legitimate purchases, do we want to do whip out your junk?
Mm-hmm. You boys go first. I got a truck ton.
I'll go first since...
Since you've been away since forever?
Yeah, you know, I've got more stuff than this, but I just wanted to grab just a few things. One, I picked this up because Eric did a post about it saying he enjoyed it. He was surprised by it. So I thought I'd give it a shot. I got it for pretty cheap. Conquest, the Lucio Fulci.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, his sword and sorcery movie.
Sword and sorcery movie from our friends at Code Red. And Eric was like, I was surprised by it. I thought it was pretty good. I thought it captured Howard better than, you know, Milius's Conan did, which most things capture Howard better than Milius's Conan. But
Sword and the Sorcerer.
Yeah. Most of those movies hit that
Beastmaster.
Nail on the head better. Beastmaster is awesome. Another one I got this at the Barnes & Noble sale. I got the Yokai Monsters collection.
Oh, those are fun.
Yeah. You know, I wasn't sure what to expect. I'd seen some of Miike's Great Yokai War years ago.
Yeah.
But I watched 100 Monsters. I watched all of them. I thought 100 Monsters was pretty good. But you don't get much monster till the very end. And then you had Spook Warfare, which was all monsters all the time. Like the main characters are the monsters. And then along with Ghosts, which I thought was, when I went on Letterboxd, I was surprised everybody was saying, oh, this is the worst one. I thought it was really good. I thought it was a good, like, kids sort of nightmare fantasy movie. It just
they hate that, Hunter. They hate any implication these are for kids.
Yeah.
Even though it's reality.
Yeah. I thought it was a really...
They love serious Godzilla movies that are pretentious, and they love... Yes. You know, they hate Godzilla versus Megalon, which is fun. You know, it's the way they
are. But it was like a kid's movie that had, like, genuine, like, peril, too, which I thought right. was really cool. And then I watched Miike's Great Yokai War, which is kind of a typical Miike movie. Like, it has a lot of great moments, but it's, like, half an hour too long. And
speaking of Jess Franco.
Yeah, Takashi no, Miike is very much the Japanese Jess Franco, though he does have some bangers in there, like 13 Assassins and stuff like
that. Right. He makes a good movie every now and then.
Yeah. He's just, you know, I heard somebody say that with Miike, you have a great opening. And then what he called the airless Miike middle.
Yeah.
And that just sort of floats along and you're not sure where it's going. And then you'll get a banger ending. And that's how he rolls.
That's him. That's the way he does it.
I saw that on a Letterboxd review and I went, that captures it. Another one. I got the Criterion of Shaft.
Oh, yeah. How's it look? Good?
I haven't watched it yet, but okay. I'm looking forward to it. It also includes Shaft's big score on it as well.
Oh, wow.
That's the better movie. So that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. You could. And it's, but yeah, I'm looking forward to digging into this one. I haven't seen Shaft since I was in college. And I've always wanted to go back to it. And so when they released this, I was like, oh, perfect excuse.
I still like it. I still enjoy it. What would have been good if they had to include the TV movies or some of them, and then release Big Score and in Africa and release the others. So you got to buy all three to get all the TV movies, which aren't great. They're watered down versions of that series, but you know,
And I just kind of picked this one up on a whim, but I enjoyed it way more than I thought I would. And that's Resident Evil Welcome to Raccoon City.
That the new one?
Yeah, this is the new one.
Ooh.
If you like John Carpenter movies, and I'm talking like 80s John Carpenter, like Escape from New York, stuff like that.
Yeah.
This movie is shot like a freaking John Carpenter movie. Like it just has that wide angles, big, you know, look to it where I was going, this feels like an old school John Carpenter flick.
Huh.
And it's produced by Paul W.S. Anderson, but it's not directed by him. You know, he did that series of stuff and it was way more action oriented. This one takes the first two games and which take place at the same time and weaves the two narratives together. It's a very straight adaptation, but it's very Carpenter in the way it's shot. I was very surprised by, and it's also kind of Carpenter in how it's a zombie apocalypse movie, but it's kind of small scale. It's not big. It never goes big with it. It always feels kind of like everything's in the shadows a little bit.
Right.
But I did not expect to, you know, I was expecting nothing. I was just like, okay, it's a Resident Evil, new Resident Evil, whatever. It'll kill an evening. And I was going, this is at first I was kind of like had my arms crossed and I went, this is pretty good, you know. But it really reminded me of Carpenter, and I think the filmmakers were really studying Carpenter and Stuart. Okay, last one, Stuart, you're gonna love this. Oh. this is one I already had like half of these, but we've been talking about doing a show on this since we started the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
The Complete Kenneth Anger.
Ah ha ha. Very good. I got the old British Blu-ray from many moons ago, but
yeah, this is the Phantom. I had the Phantom Part One that had Fireworks, Puss Moment, Rabbit's mm-hmm. Moon, You to Artifice, and Inauguration of the Pleasure Dome. This one has those plus Scorpio Rising, Custom Car Commandos, Invocation of My Demon Brother, Rabbit's Moon, and Lucifer Rising.
Oh, wow. That's so, basically everything.
Yeah. You know, listening to a lot of like spoopy podcasts, you know, it's made me go like, oh, you know, I need to do the deep dive on Anger because you know, and also there's been some posts on Facebook from his original page, like apparently there's some elder abuse going on with him, and you know, like
he's getting Stan Lee'd.
Yeah, Dan Seatler and I are like, gee, I can't believe devil worshipers treat their elderly so poorly.
Can you believe it?
But no, I was listening to somebody on some, I think it was on Gilbert Gottfried's show, say, you know, they'd been doing some debunking of some of his work in Hollywood Babylon, and they were like, isn't he part of some weird religion? And like, he's going to cast a spell on you. But he's an adherent of Thelema, the Aleister Crowley religion.
Yeah.
OTO. But yeah, no, we've been talking about doing a Kenneth Anger show for a long time.
Since the start.
Yeah. But
that'd be good to
do. Just having dug into more of that sort of, you know, kind of spooky side of it, it's made me want to.
Did you enjoy Custom Car Commando with the guy in the short shorts just wiping down the car for 3 minutes?
And which was funded by the Ford Foundation.
Yeah.
By the way, Ford Foundation paid for that. Thanks, Ford Foundation.
And it's funny, the car, the it's called Custom Car Commando with KKK as well.
Yeah.
It's just, but that's a very interesting guy, Anger. Very,
been around forever.
How the fuck is he still alive, man? He's gonna be in his 90s now.
Something to that Satan.
Satanism, man.
Mm-hmm.
He's eaten the harvesting adrenochrome from children.
You know? Probably.
But he's got that. He's you know, injecting adrenochrome into that Lucifer tattoo on his chest.
He's doing blood swaps with Sir Run Shaw back in the day. Blood transfusions.
They would do it while watching The Boxer's Omen.
Yeah. Keith Richards walks in for like half the movie.
Yeah.
He's at the same clinic.
Hey, man, Anger was plugged in with all those guys. Like Jagger, Jimmy Page, you know.
Jimmy Savile.
Yeah. I've heard some, you know, William Ramsey claims that Jimmy Savile may have had ties to OTO.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He thinks he did.
Yeah. Me and Anthony have been speaking about off air. And
because I listened to your Jimmy Savile show, and I had listened to a podcast recently where a bunch of people were talking about how that documentary left out like the just kind of the weird
was that the
occult side,
the Sean Atwood one? Is it the one you listened to?
No, the one are you talking about the podcast?
Yeah.
No, it was William Ramsey.
Oh, okay.
And they were talking about the weird kind of occult side of Jimmy Savile that's sort of not really touched on in the British Horror Story docuseries.
What an individual, that's for sure. Not one.
McCase comes up next Thursday.
McCase comes up next Thursday. Yeah.
Yeah.
The most uncomfortable silence I think you'll ever see or hear in your life when he says those things.
That's right. Jim will fix it. You know what? You know what blew my mind though? Like when I was seeing those clips from Jim will fix it, and he like gets Desmond Llewellyn to roll up in like the car from The Spy Who Loved Me.
Yeah.
Let a kid drive it. I was like, I would have lost my mind as a kid. Like I would have never recovered from that. Like,
that's the whole thing that Anthony was telling me, guys. He was so powerful.
Yeah.
He had Britain on a string. He could do what he wanted.
Yeah.
And he got away with it all.
Stunts like that. Like, yeah, that's crazy. Like, of course you're gonna love Jimmy Savile, you know, when he's doing stuff like that. Unless you said something creepy in an interview.
I don't care. Yeah, it's all brushed aside. Yeah. All right. Anything else, mate?
That's it.
That's it. All right, John.
All right, let's see if I can get this into the shot where it's clear. Because we
unblur your screen.
What's that?
I can't tell. It looks like a Munster lunchbox, is it? No.
Oh, I wish.
It's SpongeBob Square
Forbidden Planet. Is that what I can see?
It's Forbidden Worlds, actually.
Oh, Forbidden. Got a
clear spot down here, right? I don't know why it apparently you have to be human to be photographed. I mean, this is actually.
Oh, you change your preferences, you dummy.
What?
Change your preferences, you dummy, in your video.
I don't want to.
Crazy shit.
He's set in his ways.
Yeah.
Well, what I've been doing is I've been collecting a lot of Guandana Land. It's this company on Amazon that they do print on demand collections of public domain comic books from the 40s, 50s, and sometimes the 60s. And I've been getting Western comics, these science fiction anthology comics, and there's some horror stuff. And I'm really impressed with the reproduction and the printing. I mean, it's better than owning the old comics, which would fall apart in your hands if you had them. You know, it would be yellowed paper and everything. These are really good, high quality scans. They run specials on them every now and then. About a dozen will be on a really good discount. I've got some on the way that I spotted on discount. I mean, normally they're very expensive, but I enjoy there was a Buster Crab comics compilation, which has some art by Frank Frazetta. The Forbidden Worlds. I've got a Lone Ranger comic compilation on the way from 50s Lone Ranger comics.
Nice.
Supposed to look really good. I joined a Facebook group called Friends of Guandana Land, which is basically run by the Guandana Land people. And but they'll sit there and they'll point out what's on sale at Amazon that said, okay, this is half off. Go get it now. It'll be like that for a week, you know, if you're into this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But they publish all sorts of stuff. They're even doing some legally suspicious reprints of Famous Monsters magazine, but they're not calling it Famous Monsters. They call it the world's most famous magazine of monsters or something like that. But it's you can tell what it is when you're reading
yeah.
The Lone Ranger compilation is not called the Lone Ranger. They call it Who Was That Masked Man or something like that. It
sounds like the Asylum's bunch of comics.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
John, was Forry Ackerman a pervert?
Yeah, I think he was. It's like, but when I was reading Famous Monsters, I don't even think he had anything to do with the magazine by then. I think he was pretty much gone by the mid 70s. And it was just a bunch of New York magazine guys running the thing, including a guy who played for what's that band that we like so much from the 70s that never really made it? That metal band?
The Ramones?
No. The metal band. They had the
four.
Oh God, they were like Black Sabbath, but almost better.
Oh, Pentagram?
Pentagram?
Yeah, Pentagram. There was one guy running the magazine with Randy Palmer who played for Pentagram.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. So Famous Monsters has some weird ties to that industry, but Forry Ackerman apparently had very little to do with it by the late 70s, which they were covering like Star Wars and that type of garbage anyway. So Superman the movie.
There is one guy who was not rolled up in a Rob Zombie film yet. Bobby Liebling. If he's even alive.
Because he's got to make room for Iron Butterfly and he's, or Leonard Skinner.
Yeah.
Bobby was getting Me Too'd on a tour a few years back.
What was it?
Yeah, like girls were saying he was being creepy or something. I was like, all he has to do is be there to be creepy. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
He gives off that vibe, you know.
Yeah. Oh boy. All right. Is that it for you, John?
Yeah, that's it.
All right. I better change my background. So what is real? All right. I got a lot. So tear through these real quick. Got a lot of stuff sent in from Nez as well, so I'll get through that first. You sent me first off Colditz, the two series set. World War II.
And the Gong Show, too.
Yeah, I got all of this stuff hitting that bloody thing. okay.
Jesus Christ.
Don't put on the clock radio. Books. This one just came in today. Stephen King at the movies. What else?
So does it have a chapter about how the black phone is about how Stephen King's a abusive father?
No, it's not quite that new of a book.
Did you see that movie? You saw that, right?
Yeah, I saw it.
That's good.
Ethan Hawke's I enjoyed it. Ethan Hawke's mask looks like Stephen King. He's this kidnapping psychopath, and he looks like cartoon Stephen King.
So Joe Hill have, does he have, has he actually come out and said he has a problem with his dad?
I don't think so. No.
Okay.
But you know, Garrow floated that theory and I've run with it.
Of course.
Okay.
Of course.
It's good enough for Garrow. It's good enough for all of us.
But it is kind of remarkably similar to The Shining in that The Shining is a story that has serious daddy issues. Yeah. And, The Black Phone is also a story that has serious daddy issues.
All right. All right. I'll keep moving. All right. Go. Got another one. It's called Empire. The Mad World of the Movie Bees. Charles Band. It is. World of Charles Band.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know if it was Empire, like with Jussie Smollett, you know.
Yeah.
Someone's
going to come and kidnap me and take the book. Jim Holliday's Adult Video Almanac, only the best. Another one. This one I'm looking forward to reading as well. It is Come Play With Me, The Life and Films of Mary Millington, Britain's First Sex Star. Yeah. Got pics, but I better not show them. Another one, you boys gonna like this book. John Landis.
All right. The Eagle House Landing.
It's there's just a bit of blood on the pages from Vic Morrow and two dead Vietnamese children, John.
I was about to say, is it Vietnamese blood on the pages?
It's written in Vietnamese. I think every page just says "fuck John Landis."
Is there a chapter on how to skirt child labor laws?
Yeah, I think it's chapter 11.
Is there a chapter on how to have kids work for you illegally?
Yeah, how to get away with the three dead bodies and keep working. This one's a good one as well. New York in the 70s has a lot of pics in here. Of Studio 54 and just things about people like Spielberg. It's got the Rolling Stones in there. Patti Smith's in there. Very cool. I'm sort of fascinated by New York in the 70s. This one's another one, the book World Gone Wild, A Survivor's Guide. The post-apocalyptic movie.
Very comprehensive, like
it's massive.
Going through that, there I discovered so many movies going through that and watched a lot of movies. That's the book that convinced me to sit down and watch The Postman. Is it kind of art? It was like, this movie is a big showcase for Kevin Costner's ego.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of cool.
All right.
Like that.
I know. Yeah. Which was a 3-hour disaster. These things I picked up. I'll keep moving. These things I picked up for $2 each. Two discs, The Very Best of Frankie Valli, and Four Seasons.
Dude, he's coming here in October and I kind of want to go see him just to say I saw Frankie Valli.
I think so, because he ain't going to live forever. Like none of us do.
He's old. Yeah.
But I was surprised how many buddy hits the Four Seasons had, and him as a solo artist as well.
No, when I watched Clint Eastwood's Jersey Boys, it kind of blew my mind. I was going, because I didn't know anything about him, and I was going, he did that song, he did that song, he did that. There's so many songs I heard on the oldie station growing up.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Clint's Jersey Boys movie surprised me. I didn't think it was going to be anything.
It's so good. Enjoyed it. Yeah. So good. All right. Another one I picked up. This was an old Very Sarabande CD of John Carpenter's greatest hits. It's got stuff in there from Escape from New York, The Fog, Halloween, Halloween 2, Prince of Darkness, etc. All right.
Includes the Ennio Morricone tracks from The Thing, but just puts his name on them.
Yeah, pretty much. All right. Some vinyl for Hunter, since he's back.
Ooh,
I'm going to like these. Went up to a record fair the other week or so back, and I picked up pretty cheap, Big Bamboo by Cheech and Chong. Picked up this.
The Duchy.
No. This one, Ostentatious, Lounge Lizard Live. Even though people say, dickhead, you just bought this on CD the other week. Yes, I did. But I love me some Ostentatious, and for $5 on vinyl, I'll take it. This one, John, you and I were speaking about the other week, and I was moaning about going, why don't they put it on CD and put it in a collection with the other stuff the guys put out? But when you find it on vinyl, David Lee Roth's Crazy from the Heat.
From the Heat, I've got that.
Yeah. That's too good, man. Love it. Another one I was very happy to find for a few bucks, Scandal with Patti Smith.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Who was asked to sing for Van Halen to replace David Lee Roth?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man,
damn. She was with Blue. She did Blue Oyster Cult stuff too. She was on a few of their songs.
I think
yeah,
so.
That's true.
Like Vera Marie or yeah,
yeah,
Vera right. Gemini.
Yeah, think so. But married to John McEnroe now. She is of all people. Yeah, well, there you go. All right, last two. I'm coming up to John. Would like this one. Look what I found. The CD cheap, brother. Andrea True Connections, White Witch.
Oh my God. Yep. Were we just talking about that?
Yeah. The other week?
Yeah.
Yeah. $16 on Amazon.
Curse is reversed. Now it goes to positive things. It doesn't kill people.
Yeah. $16.80 from the UK with free ship. I couldn't pass it up. I
have never seen that anywhere. Wow.
That's only been released in Japan. That's it on CD. And.
Okay.
To finish it all off, you know, when you go through life, and you go, boy, there's some things I really want more than anything. Well, it's not Phantom of the Park, but next best thing is this.
Oh.
More, More, More by the Andrea True Connection. So, yeah, nice.
I've seen beaten up, scratched up copies at thrift stores, and that's it.
Yeah, no, that was 15, but that's in very, very good nick.
Yeah, I think a lot of wannabe DJs were like doing scratching with it or something. It's got the right beats for rapping. So,
yeah, just real quick, now that Hunter's back, I'm very happy. I'm going to change this background because that is everything. So, back to the shitty monsters pick. I want to find out from you if you have one, a record weight stabilizer. Do you have one? If so, do they work?
A record weight stabilizer.
You know the things you put on the top of your record spindle that holds a record down?
Oh, I don't have one. No.
You don't have one? Okay.
No.
So looking at getting one, I thought, did they really work? Did they flatten out ones that are slightly warped, vinyls that are slightly warped? People said yes, people said no, don't bother.
Yeah, it's one of those things that people seem to have strong opinions on that you kind of go,
are they a necessity or not, sort of thing. But, oh, well, if they're not, I won't bother. I was just curious. That's all. But, yeah. Anyway, see that Boris Johnson's gone.
And now it's time for Rue Britannia with your foreign correspondent, the Nez.
As usual, about 6 p.m., his time's up. That's what this is like, his time's up. I put a question mark there. I go, Boris Johnson, he goes, you need to be gone. He goes, trust me, within 48 hours, he'll be gone. 24 hours later, he was gone.
What holes is Ned's
head? I don't know. But, he's predicted this before, even with Australian politicians. He did it, and the woman resigned a few hours later.
Staggering.
Yeah.
Absolutely staggering.
So I say, from now on, I don't trust any news source but Anthony. I'll run it by him, especially if it's British news. And as well, the person who is in the race to replace Boris Johnson, he predicted pretty much when Johnson resigned, he goes, this guy will be the next PM. Out of a pool of 9 people, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He goes, I forgot the guy's name. Indian fella he is, but he goes, he'll be the next PM. Oh, fuck. Yep. So we've got a piece from Nez, as usual, about the, I've not heard it, but I dare say the mention of Boris Johnson. Because he goes, oh, now I won't be able to call him a cunt anymore. I said, oh, well, you can always do that, you know. Because he's gone doesn't mean you can't call him that in your piece. It's up to you.
Well, the funny thing was I was up in the mountains fishing in Wyoming.
Mm.
And we came down and we stopped to get a pizza at this place in Centennial. Coincidentally, where Joe Carducci lives, but he wasn't there that week.
Right.
I walk in on the TV. James Caan is dead and Boris Johnson resigns. It was like the world just shifts when you're out of contact with the media for, you know, 10 hours or whatever, or a day or two.
That happened to me back in 2000, I think it was 15 or 16. I was away on holiday with the family, and where we were at, the internet wasn't great, which is no big deal. I can live without it for, you know, 7 days. But when I came back to Melbourne, oh, Brexit's happened. Oh, okay. Shit. I didn't know about it. But yeah. Yeah.
It's sometimes it's good to get away from the internet, because I didn't have internet in Wyoming with me. I even told my son, I said, you're not taking your iPad
to play
video games or anything. We're going to be cut off from the web. And for a couple of days, it was refreshing. And then the world changes. Like, as soon as you see the media again. So it was fascinating.
No more Jimmy Caan. Paul Schrader was saying he was gambling in a hotel room that with a bunch of other people on horse races that James Caan had bought, and James Caan was completely naked in the room, and he was the only dude who was naked in the room. I posted it in AJ Benz's group, and AJ goes, really, really crazy. This sounds like it was his coke days.
The hell you say?
Really? AJ goes, really, really crazy.
Good Lord. But it was funny when they did the news obituaries for him in the media. All they ever mentioned was The Godfather. That was the only film they ever brought up.
I saw people bring up The Godfather, Brian's Song, and
Misery was the other one.
Misery, but also Thief. I saw Thief quite a bit.
I never heard Thief mentioned at all. There was no Thief. There was no Freebie and the Bean, which was never going to get mentioned. But
yeah, you know, I was surprised. Freebie and the Bean, that one was never mentioned. Honeymoon in Vegas.
Oh yeah, that's right. Did that one?
You know, that was one that people like.
Alien Nation. No mention for
Elf was mentioned a lot too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the other one.
But among our group, Hide in Plain Sight got a lot of love, which I've never seen.
Mike Malloy.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to rent that.
And he was in that movie James Toback wrote called The Gambler.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, when he prints out his IMDb page, he tries to rape a woman. He's it's all like melted. You can kind of, from the sweat, you can kind of read. It says The Gambler. The printer ink is kind of smeared, you know.
Isn't it funny, but guys like Harvey Weinstein, James Toback, Bobby Liebling, the ones who get Me Too, but you don't ever get to see Me Too, all the good looking guys like the Brad Pitts and the George Clooney's, because they're all Me Too. Sounds like the buyer's remorse, really.
Or the James Caan.
Or even producers like Robert Evans.
Yeah,
true.
Robert Evans had like embarrassing sexual stuff come out about him, but he was never Me Too'd.
No.
But like Jimmy Caan, you know, was associated with the Playboy Mansion for a long time. And Barry Sonnenfeld, he goes, when I was on the set of Misery, because he shot Misery, he didn't direct it, Rob Reiner did, but he was the cinematographer. And he said, James Caan told him that he slept with like 16 Playmates of the Month in a row.
Fucking hell.
And he goes,
what a legend.
Barry goes, who was the first one to say no? And Jimmy James got, he said, he goes, I'm not going to tell you. And he goes, just tell me the month. He goes, no, I'm not going to tell you. He goes, I want the month, not her name. Just give me the month. Like Barry Sonnenfeld said, he was determined to get him to tell who turned him down.
Yeah.
Who broke his streak.
I just thought it was odd. There was just always mentioned The Godfather, always mentioned of Misery, and that was like the only two films he's made. according to the media source that was broadcasting it. But there was so much more he did.
Thief, you know,
I think it's one of the better ones you made, one of the best ones.
Thief is tremendous.
Yeah.
And and he plays like there's a movie called For the Boys that's pretty flawed, but he plays kind of a Bob Hope type USO entertainer
With Bette Midler. Is that one?
Bette Midler, yeah.
I've seen it.
By the director of The Rose, Mark Rydell. But he was in the sequel to Funny Girl, Funny Lady with Barbara Streisand. Yeah, which was another kind of musical type thing that kind of showed that in For the Boys, it kind of shows his range. You know, he could do the kind of more musical films as well.
All you got on the nerd sites was all these letterbox freaks bitching because he was a Trump supporter, but he's always said he was a Republican.
He's always
been a Republican.
Okay.
He said, I'm no damn Hollywood liberal.
Yeah. He, if anything, I think he wanted to be legit blue collar tough guy and everything. And
yeah. And, you know, he did like radio stuff. I think like Rob Reiner posted on when he died, he said he was a Jew who could rope with the best of them.
Yeah, he would always in interviews go, yeah, the karate and rodeo, non-Jewish activities or something.
You know, he was doing karate in Wes Anderson's Bottle Rocket.
Yeah.
You know, he's like,
his karate teacher got a part as the assistant to the.
Yeah. They were like boss. Doing.
Yeah. That's Tak Kubota. Kubota, by the way, choreographed the fights in Doc Savage, Man of Bronze. He choreographed the karate.
Oh, wow.
Or trained Ron Ely and the other actor for the fight.
When he died, Alan Arkin just posted a giant smiley face on his Twitter, probably. Did not like James Caan from Freebie and the Bean.
Alan Arkin.
Did not get along with him too at all.
I watched, you know what I rewatched with him the other day that holds up? The In-Laws. That's a funny movie.
Mm. That is a good
Peter
movie.
Falk.
Serpentine. Run Serpentine. Were you doing Serpentine. That gag anywhere, huh?
With James Caan, also was good friends with Adam Sandler and appeared in a lot of his movies too.
That's true.
Yeah.
This the MMC has been Adam Sandler free since you've been gone. Now you're back. You gotta drop his fucking name again.
I remember in That's My Boy, he plays like a angry Irish priest and he beats up Adam Sandler.
So he
takes his shirt off and his collar and is like throwing punches at him.
Yeah. Did any of you
I watched the clips. I didn't have to watch the movie because I won't sit through an Adam Sandler movie.
No. But, oh, man. Did any of you guys see the interview with Piers Morgan did with Mickey Rourke?
No, is this the one where he called?
Now I gotta go watch it.
Irrelevant.
He was talking about Putin and saying he was a man who had a lot of empathy. I thought, really?
Mickey Rourke he lives on another planet. You know,
he looks like he's from another planet these days.
He's a great actor, but he exists. His brain is in another dimension somewhere. You know. Low Res is a huge fan of that movie he did recently with Eric Roberts where they're like in prison.
No, he would be. Yeah.
Have you heard of this movie, John?
No.
Oh man.
It's a reunion for those two, right?
Let me find this movie. Cause Low Res is a really big fan of it. It sounds like it's totally ridiculous. Let's see. I don't know. I'll figure it out, but we can keep going.
I did not know there was a new movie with those two together.
Oh, it's called Night Walk.
Okay.
It's called Night Walk, and it's Eric Roberts and Mickey Rourke in prison. Oh, and it's got Sean Stone, Oliver Stone's son.
Oh my goodness.
But Low Res said he thinks the movie was an excuse for like Mickey Rourke to say tons of racial slurs. I don't know. He
Just, okay, I'm looking here. Yeah, right. Sean Stone, Patrick Kilpatrick. Yeah, it's a total Richard Dyson, Louis Mandelore. It's total straight to video cast.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's very straight to video.
Mm-hmm.
Mickey Rourke plays an Aryan Brotherhood gang leader. Okay, I've got to see this. I must watch this before my vacation is done.
And they interview him. And they go, who was the basis for your character? Who would you draw upon? Donald fucking Trump, man.
No, I didn't.
He's
I need
supposed
to watch
to be in prison, but on the poster is he's got like his sunglasses writing on his freaky forehead.
And his face is so Botox to hell. Like he's got these giant, like,
oh, looks
like
awful.
He looks like
he's from Lazy Town.
Well, he looks like those French, those phony French scientist brothers, you know, mm-hmm. I can't remember their names, but they're those dudes. They're always in memes and they have fat lips and they say they've never had plastic surgery. They died of COVID recently, but they were like, they had all these science shows, but they were total like hucksters. I can't remember their names.
Oh, those two brothers, were they?
Yeah.
I don't know the name, but I know you're talking about. Yeah. Oh, that
Berghoff or so.
Yeah, I know the two you told me about. Yeah, that were man.
Yeah, that he's kind of looking like them. But no, I need to watch this interview with Piers. But I he was like calling Tom Cruise irrelevant, and I'm like, his movie just like surpassed Titanic at the box office.
I know.
Like, well, I mean, I get what he's saying.
Yeah. Well, Mickey. In the 80s, turned down a lot of stuff that everybody else had huge hits with.
He's
like Untouchables and probably some Tom Cruise stuff that was a hit for Cruise. He turned them all down because he was like, no, I'm a real actor. I only do what moves me. Or I often think he wasn't reading the scripts or something because he turns down the Untouchables. And then Kevin Costner gets the role and rides with it. And then Mickey Rourke says, Kevin Costner puts me to sleep or something like that. And that's like, this is back in 1988, he's saying this stuff. So he always had that thing where he did the gimmick where he turned his back on Hollywood. He'd be gone for 2 years. He'd do some straight-to-video piece of shit. And then he'd have that comeback movie that would get released in theaters. And it would happen every 3 years. It was the same story every time.
Yeah. I remember, like, The Wrestler was a big comeback for him.
Mm.
Sin City.
Yeah, like, everybody was like, oh,
Iron Man 2.
It's awful, that movie, though. But yeah, I know what you mean. It was
tell the story that he would go, oh, I couldn't work, so I called him at the construction company. My buddy runs one, and he says, I can't hire you or something. It's just like he would always have the same stories, like same crazy stories. He'd alienated people, nobody wanted to work with him, and then 2 years later, oh, he's this comeback movie. And it would happen like every 3 or 4 years. Domino was a comeback movie. And he'd
Domino,
have
yeah.
Yeah, it was every 3 years. It was like a cycle thing, like a gimmick, you know. I'm sure getting blacklisted by Harvey Weinstein for, you know, making an anti-Semitic comment to him probably cost him some work.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He wanted more. Because I remember he was supposed to be in Death Proof. He was supposed to play stuntman Mike.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Right.
Because I remember reading he was cast in that role and then he was gone and Kurt Russell was in the role. And the reason he lost the role was because he was asking for more money. And they were like, this movie doesn't have a huge budget. Mickey, you know, just do the movie. It'll be good for you. And he was like, I want more money. And he was in a meeting with Harvey and they were like, Mickey, don't do this. You know, you need to roll. And he goes, you know what? You Jews are all the same. And that was it. Like he had done.
Yeah, I think AJ Business said he specifically said, you fucking Jews are all the same or something like that. Wow. Great way to lose work in Hollywood, Mick.
And remember, he was on a roll. He was in all these movies for Dimension. Like he was doing Sin City.
Kill Shot.
He was in Kill Shot. You know, he was in a bunch of stuff. And then he was gone when he got recast in Death Proof. And it was because he made that comment to Weinstein.
And he wanted a trailer for his chihuahuas as well, probably.
Yeah. You know who worked on Sin City is our buddy Jim Dirks. And he said that he saw Mickey Rourke go into his open up his trailer and go, "Where's my babies?"
Yeah, yeah. Jim told me that story. He's like just weird for his Chihuahua dogs. It's bizarre.
Yeah, always care. Like, I think in, oh, you know what? That's what I forgot. He was in Another Dimension film, Once Upon a Time in Mexico. He was
He was too.
And
yeah,
he was. Oh, and he had his little Chihuahua in his hand in every scene. And I know he was probably like, "Hey, Robert, you know, maybe it'd be kind of cool if I could, you know, carry my dog in the scene. I think it would be good, you know." And Robert Rodriguez is like, "Yeah, sure, whatever, you know."
Just get that plastic face away from me. Do what you want. I don't care.
Robert Rodriguez is like, this, the script does not exist for this movie anyway. So, Once Upon a Time in Mexico. Once Upon a Time in Mexico was
on
just
a skateboard.
Like, yeah, it was just Robert Rodriguez coming up with set pieces and giving Johnny Depp cool things to say before he'd shoot people with his like fake extra arm.
Yeah. I do like that film quite a bit. I enjoy that trilogy.
I remember watching it in the theater and going, "Man, that movie was tons of fun." And then going, somebody going, "What was it about?" And I was like, "I don't know."
That's like El Mariachi. It's like Desperado. They're all, I don't know what the hell it's about. But
Desperado is really cool. But it is so clear in the final act. It's just like, we ran out of money. End. Like, you don't get a final shootout. It just fades to white and that's it.
Yeah.
All the money. There was a guy who didn't know how to handle money because his first one was made for nothing. And when he's given so much, he just blew everything at the start and said, "Oh shit, we're out of bread. What are we going to do?
Bread.
Yeah.
Out of that do re mi."
Mm-hmm. Out of those tough
tears. Franco tricks. We're going to save him for that one.
We've run out of tortillas.
Hey. But hey, Robert Rodriguez, though, I will say, was the king of DVD extras back in the day.
He's was the best. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Totally agree. He's 10 minute cooking school segments were fantastic.
10 minute cooking school, 10 minute film school. Like, he would just have all these little bits where he'd go like, "Hey guys, here's some ideas for low budget filmmaking. Hey guys, you saw Johnny Depp eat Puerco Pibil in this movie. Well, I'm going to show you how to make it." Hey,
I made guys, it. I made it once as well. Yeah. It's fucking beautiful.
Yeah. And
That was before Rose McGowan, I think, ruined his enthusiasm for movie making.
Oh yeah, I think she did to him what Asia Argento did to Anthony Bourdain,
drained the life out of him. I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because Robert Rodriguez, you know, like before that, his DVD features were fun, and he seemed to like movies seemed to be a family affair. Like, his wife was producing and his kids, he would do stuff with his kids and it was fun. And then like he had the affair, he nuked it by having it. He became like, you know, you could tell when you watch Planet Terror that he's just like lusting after.
He's love bombing Rose McGowan in that film.
And
yep.
And you know, it's like his movies kind of lost that kind of family affair quality after that, because he can destroy his family.
Well, look at the output of stuff he's done in the last 10 years has been nothing except for Alita.
Well, he did Alita. He did like Spy Kids 4. He did another Sin City with Frank Miller. Did he direct that? Did he do the second Sin City?
Co-directed it co-directed allegedly. It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He now just does Star Wars TV stuff.
Yeah, that's what he's doing now. Yeah, that's right. And that's I'm sure that pays the bills, but.
Well, people forget, like, I think Rose McGowan ruined his career because he was jumping to the De Laurentiis company. They were about to make Barbarella. They were building sets in Austin and canceled last minute.
Oh, like, really? Everybody went home. Wow.
Yeah, I remember reading about Barbarella back when I read Movie Rumor Mill news and stuff like that, like Joe Blow and all that. And then it just went away.
Yeah. Sets were built. And I think,
how do you think she ruined his career though?
I think he insisted on she being the star of everything.
Mm. Oh, okay. Okay. Okay.
That's what hurt it. I don't know why Barbarella got canceled, but I do know that sets were already built. Like, they had already built the sets and everything.
Sherry Moon McGowan. Canceled. Sherry Moon McGowan. That's what she
did. Pretty much.
That's why we don't have White Zombie anymore.
No, we don't. Wasted. They finished at the absolute apex peak of their career. And then Rob said, Sherry Moon Suicide goes solo. I'm going to go solo, which started out well, but after that, after those first two albums, nah.
Yeah, you know.
All comes full circle. Everything comes back to Rob.
Everything comes back to Rob Zombie.
It's all about Rob Zombie. Yeah. But yeah, that's it. What do you reckon, Lance? We put a fork in it?
Yeah, I think we're about done.
Yeah.
Dunzo. Yeah.
All right. Well, just a couple of things. I do need to bring up the people who contributed this week for Ko-Fi, for our donation page that we've got, which we still encourage you to go in there and donate, whether you want to do a one-off, we want to do a monthly tick over. Donate every so much every month. It's up to you. It is all appreciated. It all comes back to us. It all does not go on, you know, other extra curricular activities at all. None of that sort of shit. So big shout out this week to contributors, the Nez, Anthony Nesbitt, donated, and a very nice donation from Mr. Ben Spar, also known as Giant 13, on our Discord server, which you can join Discord because you go down to the show notes here on YouTube or on the audio version, the links in there to join Discord. So there's that. So shout out to those two guys. So donations are greatly welcome because, as I mentioned on the, I think it was the episode with Anthony that I did last one, where I said, you know, hey, we've been doing this for literally 12 years come August next month. And yeah, now it's a bit of financial help would be nice. Myself, as I mentioned as well, I will be heading over to watch this movie with those guys. I think I'm doing 3 episodes with Wolfie co-hosting, filling in for Eric Mulder, not affect the MMC at all. I've already spoke to Brett. He said, don't worry, nothing will be affected. I said, well, it wouldn't be because I need to keep this clean. I keep this clear, I should say, sorry, this schedule, and then record with Brett. So I'll be doing that for a few weeks over there as well as doing this. And I think that's it from memory. Can't think of nothing else. Got enough of my players as it is, even though I'm on holidays. But yeah, you guys got anything at all?
Nope. You know, subscribe on YouTube, subscribe to the podcast, donate if you feel so inclined.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. And Hunter, nice to have you back, mate. It really is.
Happy to be back. I've been ready to do some more podcasting. So
yeah. Very good. Very good. Okay, well, stick around for Rue Britannia, of course. Also, for those of you listening on the audio, not here on YouTube, after Anthony's Rue Britannia, I'll be playing another song by Cunt and the Gang, which will be relevant to Anthony's piece. So that's for the audio people only because, you know, here the copyright strikes, brother. They don't allow it on YouTube. So if you listen to the audio, Rue Britannia, after that will be the Cunt and the Gang song, which I'll do one more of those, which would be this one. So yeah, anyway, that's that. Fucking trailer. I almost want to watch that trailer again, but I don't want to watch it again.
I've watched it like 4 times.
Oh, know, shit. There's 10 minutes you'll never get back.
Saw it twice. That's enough. No more.
Yeah, I've done.
Go through
one.
It again and go, like, you know, see if I any visual things you missed or.
I think I'll leave it. I'll just wait till the film is out.
I want to watch some more episodes of the show because that was really fun to watch again. I have you know.
I haven't watched this show since 1981.
Dude, it really? Holds up, man, I was enjoying really? It. Yeah,
you got
that was a.
Go, Hannah.
A regular show I watched when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In fact, that probably, you know, that show is probably my introduction to all the kind of universal monster imagery, you know.
Yeah. Man, what have I
used to air on TBS life. Every day, every afternoon it aired.
Yeah.
I think that and the Flintstones.
Yeah.
And Gilligan's Island.
And the Rockford Files as well. Because that's on Bloody.
Yeah, it wasn't on TBS at that time.
Oh, okay.
Not that early.
Yeah, but yeah, I'd say go back and watch the Munsters. I don't know if you watch it before Zombies 1 or if you watch it after Zombies 1 to go, what? You know what? I really appreciate it.
Yeah, go watch it. It's streaming on Peacock, but I've got the DVD set, so that's how I'm watching it.
Yeah, and watch the two movies as well, Monster Go Home, Monster's Revenge. Buy the Blu-ray, you get both on there.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Of which Mr. Rob Zombie does an audio commentary with Butch Patrick. Oh, isn't Butch Patrick in this film, supposedly? I don't know where he was.
Cameo.
Yeah.
He's the Tin Can Man, whatever that is.
Jesus. That's the best he could give him? Really? The Last Surviving Member?
He can at
least
voice Spot or something. I don't know.
Do we even see Spot at all?
No,
I was shaking my head half the time. I think I missed half the trailer.
Yeah, that's why
he'll be a CGI or something.
What's that? Go watch it again.
Yeah, go watch it again. See all the stuff you missed.
I'll probably just walk out the room.
Look for Spot.
I shouldn't have to. She'd be there. I shouldn't have to look for.
I keep watching the trailer again in hopes that it'll be good. You know. Although actually, it's pretty good. You know,
you are the camp that Rob Zombie is aiming for. No, you've got to watch that trailer about 10 times. There's so much hidden in there.
There's so much there. No, there's so nothing there.
Yeah, but you're just not seeing my vision. Watch it another 6 times.
Oh, I just
fuck off. I'll watch it once. If I like it, I'll watch it. If I don't, well, I've got to watch it for this. But. You're not David Lean, mate. You're Rob Straker. You're Rob Zombie. You're Rob Cummings, or whatever the hell name you want to go by. He's just.
When's when's his brother from Power Man 5000 going to start directing movies?
No, don't do that.
Spider One. He might already be doing it.
Spider-Man.
Can you direct that new Mickey Rourke Eric Roberts movie?
He might have. One second. I'm looking at Spider One. Oh, wait. He's directed a bunch of short films and some music videos.
Oh, they don't count.
So.
Well, they do, but they don't count. So we don't want him to do anything.
He did a film. These are all pretty recent, too. 2021. My goodness.
When does Rob Zombie do his martial arts movie?
I don't know.
Yeah, John shaking like his head.
He's produced a bunch. Huh.
Yeah. But I mean, holy shit. It just, yeah. I mean, it's like his trailer that was in the Grindhouse double feature that was it the Nazi werewolves of the SS, whatever it was called?
Werewolf women of the SS. Yeah.
He had to have Rob Zombie all over the fucking screen title. And he's done it again with this one.
I wish though he would have done a Fu Manchu movie with Nick Cage.
That might have worked.
Yeah. That would have been awesome.
You would have had
the protest alone would have been worth it from the Asian American Actors Association.
Mm-hmm.
It's the last time we got a Fu Manchu movie was Werewolf Women of the SS.
Yeah.
Which actually looked out. One guy was trying to do it.
Really?
Yeah.
Alex D. Iglesias was trying to make one back in the 90s. And Antonio Banderas was cast, and they ran into a rights issue.
Hmm.
So they weren't able to make Fu Manchu, because I guess he's not public domain everywhere or something.
Yeah. Why did we never get the Tyrannosaurus Rex film? That's what I ask.
Oh, yeah. That, I remember when you were like...
I was all over
anticipating
that. Yeah.
I remember you were like, oh, he's going to do Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Man, I got a t-shirt of it printed up.
Coming.
I printed up a t-shirt of it. Was hoping it would come out. Never did. But
he was going to do a hockey comedy, and he never made that.
Yeah, boy. You know what? I didn't even bother with that Clerks 3 trailer. I just could not do it.
I don't care about
beyond disinterested. Clerks 2 was bad enough.
I was done with that guy like 20 years ago.
Yeah. No. All right. Let's wrap it up and sign out, boys.
Adios.
Peace out.
And now it's time for Rue Britannia with your foreign correspondent, the Nez.
In a move that will surprise nobody ever knows, you think serial shooters should be allowed out on bail. A high-profile English Premier League footballer has been arrested this week over allegations of rape. Though libel laws prevent me from saying who the player is, I can say most definitely whom it isn't, which is to say it's not Chelsea's Ross Barkley. The unidentified player who really isn't Ross Barkley joins a long list of Premier League footballers who seem to take no for yes, chicken for beef, and get lost for let's get the party started. Manchester City's Ambrose Mendy is in prison currently awaiting his trial this year over allegations of rape, so as to say multiple, as well as also Everton's Gylfi Sigurdsson, who's also under investigation over multiple allegations of sexual assault, amongst others besides. But most definitely not Ross Barkley. Weird. And earlier on in the year, I reported on newly elected male Tory MP Jamie Ross, the first MP to come out as multigendered, having been formally arrested and having been charged with multiple traffic offences. Which is to say, in his, her, its case, failing to stop at a traffic collision, as well as also leaving a vehicle in a dangerous position. In this case, leaving his car after a late-night car crash in his ward constituency. Well, summer may be the silly season for sure, though it certainly got even sillier when he formally, finally, and surprisingly, was found guilty this week. Even more sillier when, during his trial, it was reported that the jailbird had been wearing at the scene of the crime a black PVC leather miniskirt, tights, and high heels during his car crash. Although exactly just how far Steve would have been running in high heels, fleeing the scene of the crime, is frankly somewhat debatable. Anyway, back on Earth, Wallace now faces a custodial jail sentence, deselection from his seat, expulsion from his party, and the end of a short-lived career. Also, the Conservative Party now faces an all-too-awkward local by-election, and the Home Office faces an even more awkward choice. Just which prison will they actually send him to? Male or female? Evidently a fan of Joe. Sport and the Conservative Party's candidates for this year's annual leadership election began to launch their leadership campaigns in earnest, with all the dignity, gravitas, and stoicism of Tinto Brass directing a Police Academy sequel. The usual list of failures, wokes, idiots, has-beens, wannabes, and Jeremy Hunt. In the course of 1 week alone, one candidate was ousted as actually being under investigation for tax evasion. One candidate humiliated herself when her campaign launch ad featured convicted murderer Oscar Pistorius. One candidate touted his fiscal credibility despite having married an Indian billionaire who got caught not paying tax in the UK. One candidate dropped out before he even actually announced his campaign. And one candidate couldn't really answer if it was actually still a Remainer or not. For after all, what are summers for? A further note in passing, 2 months ago I reported on the case of a house husband who basically turned his back on his wife and child to run off with a Ukrainian refugee who'd been taken in. Well, you'll be glad to know that there's actually a positive update on the story, and certainly a positive postscript. The Ukrainian refugee in question, Cam Minx, Cam Lovebird, Cam Tart, has just been informed by her doctor that she's effectively going blind, and that she is fully expected to lose her sight completely by Christmas. 22-year-old Ukrainian refugee Sofia Kardiam is said to be distraught at the diagnosis, but not half as much as distraught at her boyfriend Tony Garnett, who gave it all up on the throw of a dice to leave his wife and child. Quote unquote, "I'm gutted," said the 29-year-old tattooed homewrecker. "I've been crying my ass off since she started bumping into lampposts and living room furniture. Truth be told, the last time I cried this much was basically at the end of Blood Simple. What to do?" he bemoaned. "Well, I have no idea, Tony, but how about the idea of getting you a job as an air traffic controller?" On a serious note, Wimbledon finally came to an end with Novak Djokovic triumphing over the banality of evil, middle-class tossers paying £75 for strawberries and cream, and the heir to the throne avoiding assassination in broad daylight yet again. Never mind the idea of Sue Barker making a final appearance at Wimbledon whilst receiving effusive praise from ex-boyfriend Cliff Richard, which reminds me of an old joke from 1982. What's the connection between Sue Barker and Princess Grace of Monaco? Answer, they've both been fracked by cliffs. Aye, thank you. And finally, it's done. It's over. He's gone. Never again. And never again means never again. As indeed, never again I'll never have to record the use of the C word. Ever again. Happiness is a sad gaslighter. Bliss.
Is a Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.